Both of the lessons, biblical lessons for today, come with the theme of being alone. In Genesis, Jacob is by himself at the river Jabbok. He's wrestling with an angel over his fears of facing his brother Esau, who he ripped off the birthright from, wondering how that's going to go. And in Matthew's gospel, Jesus is withdrawing, it says in the text, to a lonely place upon hearing about the death of his cousin John, which takes place in the chapter just preceding ours. Now, both of these lessons are sermons in and of themselves. I cannot do both texts great justice today simply because there's so much that's in these that are great. They're great texts. They're packed with a lot of issues. But the one that I really want to focus on with us this morning is being in a lonely place. Because that phrase is used twice in Matthew's story here. And whenever something is repeated within a context of a story, it tells me pay attention to this because that's something that's of importance. Which tells me that Jesus wants us to notice what's going on. He wants us to notice the place that he's in and the condition that he's in. Now, if you've ever experienced real loss in any kind in your life, and most of us, I guarantee it, if you live long enough, you will. But if you haven't yet, give it time. The death of somebody that you love, the death of a dream or a hope that you've held throughout your life, the loss of a serious held expectation. You can relate, if you've gone through any of these kinds of losses, on this need to withdraw into a lonely place that's apart and away from everything else, where you can kind of just, I don't know, lick your wounds in some cases, or maybe just survive the shell shock of the loss. It's almost an instinctive response that we have to withdraw when we've been emotionally jolted. It's a normal thing to do. What's the first thing, for example, that often happens to church folks who suddenly go through a major loss, like a divorce especially? They stop coming to church. At least one of the partners does. And they drop out of their social circles, and they literally go outside and turn within themselves, and they get lost, for example, into themselves. There seems to be this instinctive desire that we always have found as human beings to want to withdraw into a lonely place. And so this is exactly what Jesus is doing. So we can at least understand the emotion that he's feeling at this point when he's going to go away. The only difference is that he can't find a lonely place. That's the difference. Because the crowds, upon hearing the news of Jesus' loss over the loss of his cousin John, they keep following him. They keep pressing in on him. Maybe they're worried about him, you know, and wanted to provide some kind of comfort by just being with him. Maybe they were worried that he wouldn't come back to them, that this would be such a devastating loss that he'd quit his mission altogether and stop feeding and healing people. We don't know the reasons that they came to him, but they came probably for a number of reasons and followed him for the same numbers of reasons. Now, what's interesting is what Jesus does, his response to the crowd, because the gospel states that he had compassion on them and cured their sick. If it had been up to me, and I had just lost, let's say, my wife or one of my daughters, something that's so very critically important to my heart, I don't think I'd been so gracious. I'd probably be annoyed, and I'd even be angry that all these folks were still expecting me to be there for them after having suffered such a loss as Jesus has suffered. Like, just leave me alone, man. Give me some time to get my head together. What do you want from me? I'm not even myself. How can I help you? I'd probably be thinking, hey, come on, you know, I need a break at this moment. Didn't you hear what happened in my family? They just killed John, man, my cousin. And he was doing far less than I was. Give me a break. Give me some time to heal. Then come upon me. But that's not what Jesus does. He doesn't say that. He doesn't do that. He may have thought it, but that's not what he does. Instead of going into that lonely place, he had compassion, it says, on the crowd, and he healed their sick. He actually started to engage back in his ministry, is what it says. Ever notice how the Bible never really tells us what Jesus is thinking or feeling very often? It doesn't really tell us, when you read the Bible, what is going on in his mind. It only reports what he does. And that's important because the only way to change a feeling or a thought is to change the behavior that surrounds that feeling or that thought. So Jesus forgets for a moment about finding his lonely place And he begins to heal a bunch of people that he doesn't even know. And he begins to hang out with a bunch more and begin to have conversations pretty soon. His mind is completely off the fact that he's lost John. John, he doesn't even remember John, probably, at this moment. And before you know it, evening has come. The whole day has passed by. Wow, it flew by. Instead of being a lonely place, it's become an abundant place. The disciples approach Jesus and they say, "This is a lonely place, Lord. And the day is now over. Send the crowds away." They say it because the crowds have nothing to eat. But that's not really true. What's going on is that the disciples themselves want to eat. They're hungry. They've been with Jesus. They haven't suffered the same kind of loss, so it's not as hurtful to them as it is to Jesus. And they don't want to be bothered with helping the crowd find food. It's like, okay, you did your thing, Jesus. You were a great guy, man. Now just send them away. Let them go find some food. But there's no 7-Elevens. There's no fast food joints in the Galilee at this time in history. Now, what's interesting is the description that the disciples themselves give to this place. Jesus, who is looking for a lonely place, can't find one because the crowds are following him here. And his disciples describe the very same scene filled with people, thousands and thousands of people, as being very lonely. It's anything but lonely, right? There's no loneliness here. Jesus is surrounded by people who need him. He doesn't have time to be lonely. He doesn't have time to even be caught up in his own thinking. Here's their next patient, Dr. Jesus. Can you please fix this, you know, person that's been blind since birth? Yes, boom, focused on that. This person's crippled. Gonna fix them? Yeah, okay. He's not able to get into his own head. And I think the reason that the disciples describe this as a lonely place is because they just don't want to be bothered. That's the crux of the problem. Because while it may be natural for us when we've been hurt emotionally to want to withdraw to a lonely place, it often leads to many of us being lonely. That's the problem with going to a lonely place. And this is something that God knows. So God gives Jesus a crowd of people to take care of as a way of healing his hurt, a way of getting Jesus outside of himself so that he can heal again. It's the only way I know of truly healing from sadness and hurt, to become involved. It works. It works. I'll close with this story for you. At a children's clinic in Dusseldorf, Germany, I came across this story a few years back in the early part of the 20th century, when modern medicine was still in its infancy and when you were still about as likely to die from going to visit a doctor as you were for not visiting a doctor, where your chances of survival were literally 50-50. It wasn't really till the advent of penicillin and antibiotics that our chances of survival from visiting a doctor increased greatly. It wasn't because they became better at things so much as that they just didn't have the tools to get us better until they came up with antibiotics. Well, anyway, Jesus, in this story, in Dusseldorf, Germany, the early part of the 20th century, when medicine, as I said, is still in its infancy, there were a lot of people, especially children, who wasted away, simply just wasted away and died. And no one knew what the cause was. Later, at the Menninger Clinic in Topeka, Kansas, Dr. Menninger found out what was called failure to thrive was the reason, that there was no love. And if there was no love and care and compassion and holding and touching an infant, they would literally die because of that. But they didn't know that at this place in Dusseldorf at the time. It wasn't unusual, therefore, to see the word hopeless written on many of the admission charts at this place, because there was no cause for why the child was failing to thrive and what brought them in the first place, and there was no known cure for the child either. There was one doctor who stood out, however, amongst all of the others on the staff. He was like a beacon of hope to those who were hopeless. And his name was Dr. Fritz Talbot. And the one thing that made him different from all of his colleagues was the fact that he had lost one of his own children to an unknown cause, which made him pretty sensitive to sick children, much the way that the doctor who took care of my ex-wife and myself and her father upon the realization that Marna, my ex-wife's mother, was dying of melanoma. We'd gotten that diagnosis in the morning. By noon when we arrived, she was in a coma, and 24 hours later, she was dead. And the doctor that took care of us at the hospital in New York City had lost his mom to cancer and his wife to cancer. And this guy was like Jesus in terms of his ability. It wasn't that he could heal us, so to speak, but his ability to connect with us because of the losses that he experienced and knew how devastating this was for us really was the best medicine that I've ever received from a doctor, to be honest. It was quite amazing. Well, anyway, there was that one doctor in this clinic who had that ability because of the loss that he had experienced himself. And he had found more success in dealing with these sick children than any of his colleagues had found. So for many years, medical interns would follow Dr. Talbot around from ward to ward, trying to learn how and what he was doing in terms of handling the diseases of these children that were labeled as hopeless and why so many were getting better. One of the interns took the time to write down his observations of Dr. Talbot, and he observed that when Dr. Talbot came across a child with where traditional medicine and therapy had failed to help, he would take the child's chart and scrawl something on it in his doctor's illegible handwriting, which always worries me at pharmacies, how they know. But it was nearly impossible to make out his scrawl, so this intern didn't know what he was writing, but the intern saw remarkable improvement always in the health of these particular children that he was overseeing. So finally he asked the head nurse to interpret the unreadable prescription that the doctor had been writing all along in the charts, and she chuckled and said, "Oh, that stands for old Anna, old Anna." And she pointed at the end of the quarter to this grandmotherly woman who was seated in a large rocking chair with a baby in her lap. "Whenever we have a baby for whom everything else has failed," the nurse said, "we turn the child over to old Anna. She has more success than all of the doctors and nurses in this institution combined at curing them. And the compassion and love that old Anna offered is what she gave to these kids. That was the only discernible difference between what the doctors were doing and what she was doing. They were giving the children medicine and all this, but they were in and out of the room writing on charts, being doctorly, scientific, so to speak. Meanwhile, Anna would take the child and simply hold the child, rock the child, read stories to the child, kiss the child, tell the child it was loved and how much it was needed in this world and how special this child was. And compassion and love can only be found, you see, by getting out of ourselves. That's the whole reason that Jesus says you must lose your life in order to find it. In other words, it's another way of saying that when you're hurting the most, yeah, you might need a little time to be in a lonely place, but you need to come out of it too. You need a time to become reconnected because that's where healing takes place. The healing comes when you get outside of your own head and outside of your own sphere of influence and go out and see what somebody else needs, really. Which is why, in spite of our natural desire to withdraw to lonely places, God knows it's not so good for us. We were not created to be alone. But instead, God gives us these opportunities, like he did Jesus, to turn our losses and hurts into something meaningful and hopeful by giving to others to care for them, to get out of ourselves. I think that's the miracle, really, of this story. I mean, it's cool that Jesus can multiply things like that. And it's cool that Jesus can walk on water. And it's cool that he can turn water into wine. All that's cool stuff. But what's really amazing is when he gets the disciples to begin to do the things he's been doing, right? That's what's cool, because that implies that we can begin to do the things the disciples and Jesus did as well. Jesus told the disciples when they said, you know, send them away. It's getting late and there's no food. He says, you feed them. That's how it should be heard. You feed them. You do something about it, you 12. You've been with me for two and a half years. You've seen me do a lot of this stuff. Come on. You can do it yourselves. And that's what the miracle is. The miracle is getting us outside of ourselves. Outside of ourselves by feeding someone else. That's why feeding is such an important part of what we do. It's one of the reasons we love summer worship, I think, too, literally. Because after the message, after the time of gathering on the hillside, so to speak, what do? We eat. And when we eat, we share that fellowship time, that bonding time, and it builds community. It builds us closer together. It gets us out of ourselves. It helps us heal because we give something back. And that makes us feel of worth which is everything. And I believe if Jesus was here today with us, he'd say, go and do likewise. Feed each other. Feed each other emotionally. Feed each other when you're hurting. Share in your joys together. Feed each other food when you're hungry. Feed each other hugs when you're spiritually hungry. Pray for each other. Love each other. And by doing this, you will not only find your life, you will have an abundance of it. That, I think, is our purpose. That's why Jesus does what he does, to show us how to be. Amen.